if I could visualize the Japanese part of my brain, it's really two parts. It's the childhood kind of a sort of semi-native kind of part. And there's the other part that I learned as an adult, which is not. So it's extremely awkward for me, sort of, you know what I mean?
Hey there, this is Stephanie from StephFuccio.com, where we have globally minded podcasts and podcast services. I am pleased to share another episode of Geopad's Language, where we explore our relationship to the languages that touch our lives through conversations with our global guests. In this episode, we are headed over to Tokyo, Japan, to talk to Ken Hirano. Ken is a friend of mine that I met in a book club while we both lived in Shanghai, China, I want to say about 2 years ago. He was born in Japan, but his family moved to the U.S. before he started school. He has returned to Japan a few times in his life to live there, and now is actually one of those times. He moved back to Tokyo about a year ago, and recently on LinkedIn, he wrote a post about this geographic anniversary and the cultural and language identity issues that popped into his head. And this is exactly what we're digging into in this episode, in this conversation. This identity path took us through some very interesting things, like how he feels in different languages, why he feels more simple and defenseless in Japanese than in English, how Japanese locals versus expats in Japan treat his Japanese and Americanness, and where he is the most comfortable. Quick spoiler, none of these issues have a clear and defined answer, and that is what made this nuanced discussion with Ken so interesting to have. You can find the full show notes, links, etc. to this episode at defuccio.com/geopatslanguage/32.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Ken, for joining us on Geopat's Language.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Ken, where are you right now?
I'm in Tokyo, Japan. Full name's Ken Hirano. I'm working as a mental health therapist here in Tokyo. Been here for it's been about a year and a half almost since I arrived here. I came back here from Shanghai, where we met, right?
Yeah.
I was in Shanghai for about 3 years and I was a school counselor there. And before that, I was back in California doing counseling kind of work.
Yeah. Okay. So are Japan and China the two places that you've lived outside of the U.S.?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Canada, I didn't really.
The reason why we're chatting is because last week, I think it was last week, you posted something on LinkedIn that I found really, really interesting. And I asked you if we could chat about it. And I think probably the best way to set this up is to have you read it.
So I posted, 2 weeks. Sorry, not last week.
Ah, time during COVID.
Yeah, COVID time, yeah. So I wrote down, it's now been over a year since I moved to Tokyo from Shanghai. Among the things I miss about China is the spontaneous openness of the people. One story I like to talk about my time there involves an experience at a Japanese restaurant in Shanghai I used to go to where some of the Chinese employees spoke really excellent Japanese. So my first visit, I began this conversation in Japanese with the waitress there. Who, after a couple of minutes, you know, after you can kind of see the facial expressions, actually realize that, you know, I'm not a totally native Japanese speaker. And then after a few minutes, she says in a really loud voice in Japanese to another waitress across the room, she points her finger at me and says, "This guy's Japanese, but his Japanese isn't that good." Kind of in that tone of voice, kind of this surprise, kind of amusement, you know, not with no malice or anything. And I loved it. I felt kind of seen and validated. Who I am on the inside, not just on my outside. So then we went on to a quick discussion about Asian Americans, among whom are millions of Chinese Americans who speak English natively and speak Chinese kind of imperfectly or excellently or not at all. It depends on the individual. And she mentioned that she had heard of those overseas Chinese, but she didn't know there were Japanese equivalents. Then I went on to say that, you know, life is made up of these little micro moments where we feel seen and validated, or the opposite, unseen and invalidated. So I try to keep this in mind when I, in all my interactions with people. And that's it. Yeah, I'm back to my...
There's a lot to unpack with that. It's always tricky to ask someone, well, how good is your Japanese? Because people are always like thinking they should, it should, their language skills should be much better and so forth and so on. So let me try to ask it a different way. Are you fluent in Japanese? Can you talk to someone without being totally confused on what they're saying?
Yeah. It's actually a good point about the question about, you know, when you want to find out about another person's language ability. I notice that people do ask these kinds of general kind of questions, and that's normal, you know, like, you know, how is your Spanish or whatever. Usually, we don't get useful or accurate answers typically. You know, they're kind of general. A general question like that elicits kind of general answers that are not that helpful. So it's better to ask a more specific kind of situational questions. For example, let's say I thought that you studied some Spanish or something, and maybe you studied in Mexico or whatever. I might ask you something like, if you were in a college in Mexico, University of Mexico, sitting through a economics 101 lecture in Spanish, how much of it do you think you can understand?
You know, that's a high bar. Yeah, right.
Very situational, very probing question, right?
Right.
And maybe somebody might say something, oh, I'll be totally lost. I might get like 10 or 20%. Then I'll reduce it down. Then I might say something like, well, can you order a pizza over the phone?
Yeah.
Maybe let's make it a complicated order.
Over the phone.
You know, three large pizzas. two of them are half vegetarian and half Hawaiian or something like that. You know, can you do that? And let's say the other person kind of replies, yeah, I think I can, kind of in that way. Then you kind of automatically work their Spanish
language, right? No, okay. So can you
kind of situational probing question?
Sure.
Wait, do that for me, would you?
Yeah, exactly. Can you order a half this, half that pizza in Japan? In 100%. Japanese.
That's easy. No problem. 100%.
So they will do half order.
So raise the bar.
Raise the bar. Okay. Can you do your therapy sessions in Japanese?
Oh, there you go.
I think I went too high, didn't I?
So, yes, that's kind of high. So with adults, I would say it's kind of, I would struggle. Yeah.
Okay. So because a little bit lower.
In therapy, it's important that I reflect back really accurately.
Yeah.
If it happened, I think every 10 minutes, I'd have to ask, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know that word. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Not good.
They're not paying me to be their Japanese teacher.
Okay. Can you watch a movie with someone in Japanese and then discuss it in Japanese?
Yes, but I did watch a Japanese movie recently, and there were no English subtitles. Mm-hmm. And it was a modern drama. Now, it was kind of complicated. It was a kind of a political kind of drama. And I basically got it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say it was about 50 to 70% maybe. You know, it's kind of like that.
Okay.
Now, they do have these dramas that take place back in the old days. You know, those are.
Yeah. Well, they're using different language, right?
Yes, it is. It's different, yeah.
Yeah.
So for those, I mean, literally, I don't know what they're saying most of the time.
Yeah. So you're definitely fluent, but it's,
I'm conversationally fluent, yeah.
Right. Okay. Did you grow up speaking Japanese?
Some, but it's more listening. I grew up in this immigrant family where my father kind of dominated the family household, and he was an English teacher.
Yeah.
Here in Japan. It was one of those immigrants where there are all different kinds of immigrants, but some are where, you know, they really want to retain all the old country stuff, you know, the ways and all that. And that's the image I think a lot of people have. That is not true for everyone. It was not true for my father. He was not big on that. So he kind of dominated. My mother, if she had her way, I think it would have been more Japanese. But she didn't speak to me Japanese. So I can hear it fine. If it's household Japanese, that's fine. But if we're talking about, say, politics or economics, counseling theories or
I do. I was trying to think of a book that I read. Oh, it was this woman that went back to Iran to kind of, you know, a heritage trips of sorts and reconnect with all of her relatives and really refine her Farsi and that kind of thing. And she had hit that wall where she realized she called it like kitchen Farsi, where she could talk to all of her relatives. Yeah, but she's like, other conversations were more difficult. And that was the first time that I really made that distinction.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I'm going to put...
a hard time understanding that, I think. But yeah, please.
Yeah. So are both of your parents Japanese, from Japan?
Yeah.
Okay, and they moved to the U.S.
My father was born in colonial Korea. He grew up mostly in Japan, yeah. And he didn't speak in Korean.
And were you born in Japan?
I was, yeah.
Okay, and then you moved to the U.S. when you were how old?
Yeah, so my entire schooling, it was before kindergarten. So I went to kindergarten through to graduate schools in San Francisco. Yeah.
Very early. Okay. Do you remember Japan when you were a child?
You know, I don't know if there are real memories. Yeah. You know, sometimes when you're 3 years old, you know, when you're seven, they tell you how you behave when you were three.
Yep.
You don't know if it's what you remember as a seven-year-old hearing what you supposedly did when you're three, or they're real memories. I'm not sure. Foggy ideas. They might be real memories. Maybe not. I don't know.
Was it last year you moved back to Japan with your wife, and now you're there?
Yes. Yes, we are here.
You wrapped up your life in California and elsewhere, and you're in Japan.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I'm still stuck to California. My mother's still there.
As someone who's never reached fluency in a second language yet, who hasn't reached fluency in a second language yet, I love the question. What do you feel different when you are speaking Japanese versus speaking English? And the reason I ask is because that relief when that woman in the Chinese woman in the Japanese restaurant saw you and didn't expect you to sound natively Japanese, that relief sounds like there's a little bit of a tension there with the language.
Yes, I do feel different. It is the language of my childhood. It's not the language of more sophisticated intellectual kinds of things. So when I speak Japanese, it's associated with, you know, childhood, you know, like it's my experience with it growing up was very, it's kind of limited to simple kinds of things in the house. That kind of stuff is no problem. That's not a problem. But this huge contrast that I feel, which I think, you know, other people don't quite get, I think. Between that kind of kitchen Japanese, you know, versus more like outer world job, politics, Japanese. That's the part that I'm not comfortable with. It's not a big part of me. I learned a lot of words because I first moved here when I was 32. That was like 20 years ago. And I learned a lot. But even then, you know, at that age, you know, 32, it doesn't sink in the way that, you know, a language would if you're 10. Or five, or even 15. So if I could visualize the Japanese part of my brain, it's really two parts. It's the childhood kind of a sort of semi-native kind of part. And there's the other part that I learned as an adult, which is not. So it's extremely awkward for me, sort of, you know what I mean?
So it sounds like the childhood one might be the more warm and fuzzy one?
Yeah, of course, warm and fuzzy.
Okay.
Fuzzy, yeah, it's kind of simple.
When you were there at 32, did you formally study the language then?
No, I learned on the fly.
Wow.
I learned a lot. I just, my Japanese must have tripled in the first few months.
How long were you there for then?
First time was 3 years. It was hard. Just adapting and the whole ritual of business cards and all that. I think you, I had a lot of fun, but it was hard.
Yeah, and 20 years ago. I'll ask you. Has Japan gotten less formal since when you lived there 20 years ago?
I don't think
so. Or does
so.
It feel the same? Yeah, that was my instinct too. I was like, yeah.
In fact, I want to say it hasn't changed much at all.
Wow.
Walking around, I mean, the businesses have changed, some of them, but just a few. Big companies have not, mostly the same. A lot of concrete, a lot of people walking around. People are pretty much well dressed and, you know, well behaved. And yeah, it's kind of the same. Yeah.
It's Steph popping in. I have some previous episodes on the Geopets podcasting network that I want to share with you that are connected to Japan. I'm going to start out with books and then we'll go into the language episodes. There's only 5 episodes. I'll give you episode numbers, and I, of course, will have the links in the show notes for you as well. Since you're listening to this episode on Japan and Japanese, that you might be curious about some other aspects of the culture and language. So, first of all, in this interview with Ken, I do talk about a conversation that Tachana, actually not me, but Tachana had with Yuki Tajima. She was talking about Banana Yoshimoto's book Kitchen. Oh, it's funny, we were talking about kitchen language. Well, here is just the book Kitchen. And that is episode 9 on Geopets Books. Now, going on to the language episode. So episode 6 is where we talk to Lucy, who grew up with Mandarin Chinese and learned English and Japanese along the way. And she talks quite a bit in episode 6 about her experience with those very, very different languages. Then we're moving on to episode 4, where I talked to Eric, who that's his English name. Lucy and Eric are both of their English names. He grew up with Mandarin Chinese as well, and then learned English, Japanese, and French. And in episode 4, we dig into all of those. In episode 10 of Geopet's Na Pod Pomo, which is National Podcast Posting Month, which is coming up again in November. I'm very excited. It's where we post one episode a day, every day for the month. It's crazy, but it's wonderful. So that's under the Geopet's Na Pod Pomo podcast. That's episode 9 and 10, is where we talk to Lisa about her experience with typing and reading Japanese. In that same Geopet's Na Pod Pomo month, we talked to Dakota from a Dakota Abroad YouTube channel and now the Language Learning Lounge podcast. We talk about Japanese calligraphy ASMR. Yep, I know you're going to want to hear that. So it's under Geopet's Na Pod Pomo episode 5. Again, I'll have all the links in the show notes for you. And I really hope that you enjoy all of these Geopet's Podcasting Network Japan-related episodes. Let's get back to the conversation with Ken, who is in Japan. You can try and just forget
it, or you can stretch it for a while. If I may, I would describe Ken that speaks English as being very laid back, very friendly, very very calm. I don't know if you agree with that or not. Do you agree with that version of your personality?
Yeah, I guess so.
What else would you add to that?
Well, I was hoping you'd say funny, but you know, if you don't think so, it's fine.
Oh, you are funny too. I was just... Okay, we'll add funny to that. So in current day Japanese Ken, Ken speaking Japanese, how would you describe you in that language?
Yeah, so I definitely do come across differently, I'm pretty sure. I think I do come across as more simple. I can still make a lot of jokes, in fact. But I can't always make complex sentences. So yeah, I think I come across as more simple. Mm-hmm. I also think I come across as more defenseless, I think.
How so?
I feel like in Japanese, I don't know how to fight back. I remember working in Japanese and it was kind of hard for me to like kind of hold my own. I feel like I can do that in English now. I can call you out on your shit. No, I can do that, you know, but I can't quite do it in Japanese. There's this insecurity about it because I know it, but I don't.
Is it done in Japanese? Do people have that kind of pushback and forth
course,
in the workplace?
Of course. Oh, that whole thing about them. Oh, yeah. The whole ridiculous harmony thing about Asia. It makes me laugh. I don't know what reality these people live in, honestly.
Well, to someone that doesn't speak Japanese but has been there, it does seem to
be. These tourists, they come here, they get treated well. Of course they do. And they go back home and they talk about some nonsense about how polite it is. Well, it's not nonsense. It's true at a superficial level. I remember. That reminds me of a story. When I first moved here in 1999, there's this Japanese colleague. Somebody was telling him, oh, Japanese is so polite and nice. And he comes back with, oh, yeah, Japanese are polite, but not nice.
Meaning intentionally mean to people?
No. Well, I think it is a country where I think facades are very important. So I think impressing other people from other countries. And of course, it's appreciated. It's not an insincere.
I'm still curious about this. You're saying in the workplace, there is that kind of back and forth, like pushback with coworkers. Is it different than in English? Because, I mean, there are a fair bit of cultural differences.
I'm just trying to think back at the meetings. Well, I remember back in 99, you know, going to lunch with my colleagues, and they were mostly native, all Japanese. I remember kind of being struck by how viciously they talked about managers and other people at work. You know, it was just really vicious after just a few days in your work. I remember one guy, he quit after 1 week. And this is a country where, you know, the image is that, well, people stay forever, right?
Yeah.
Not this guy, not in this company. Yeah, he quit after 1 week. He was upset at the way he was treated. Well, I suppose there's more hierarchy, which I guess in meetings, you know, it is more explicitly respected. Kind of like the military, right? That doesn't mean people don't have their own thoughts. You know, what they really think about, you know, the director of the group, you know. And they do talk about it when colleagues at work.
There is that misconception, I think, that just because they might not say it to everyone, that they're not thinking these things.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, when non-Japanese go to these companies, either, you know, they're expats who work there because, you know, it's a big multinational or whatever. Yeah. you know, there definitely is this, I've noticed this sort of a little, there isn't real communication. Well, there's some, but, you know, not always a lot of real communication, I notice. It's kind of this one confirmation bias talking to another, one person with a confirmation bias talking to another person with the same kind of confirmation
bias. Yes.
You know, some guy from the U.S., some white guy, you know, with some ideas about, you know, Japanese work cultures. He's red. He's got good intentions, all sincere and all that kind of stuff. You know, wants to be sensitive and all that kind of stuff. Talking to some Japanese guy, usually the Japanese guy usually has, it's a big part of the country to think that, you know, it's, you know, Japan's kind of unique and it's different and all that kind of stuff. So they want to believe that. They both want to believe each other's, you know, biases. So they're just kind of confirming their own biases.
Let's come back to you. In China, there was a term for the Chinese that came back, the overseas Chinese. There was a term for that. I don't remember what that was. Do you remember that?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Is there a term for that in Japan?
Well, there's Nikkei. Sometimes I'll introduce myself as a Nikkei.
And what is that?
Yeah, it's an overseas Japanese.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And do it's kind of so well known. The US, Peru, Brazil, Canada, the big countries for it.
And do you feel like when you're just talking to somebody new that they're picking up on that you're not, that you haven't spent your whole life there?
Yeah, of course. It's immediate. Yeah. A few months ago, I was on a bike ride and I stopped at some rest stop and had a conversation with a stranger there. And after a few seconds, you know, this is a very typical kind of reaction. It's visible typically, not all the time, but typically on the face.
Yeah.
It's usually a little look of surprise, you know, oh. Gaiji, you know, Gaiji means foreigner. They'll look at me, they'll often say something like, oh, sorry, it's kind of rude of me, but are you Japanese? Kind of in that tone of voice, in that nice, polite, classic Japanese way. And I'll say, I'm a Nikkei, and I'll give a little background. Then pretty much 99% of the time, they'll compliment me, I'm a Japanese. Inside of me, you know, I'm kind of rolling my eyes upward. I mean, I'm a polite guy too, so I'll say, okay, thanks. That's a typical conversation I have with people.
And does the tone of the conversation change once they ask that, once they realize? Or is that
No. I mean, it's pretty much what I get. I like it when they get it. Usually they do. I want to say a good 70, 80, 90% of the time they get it. So, for example, if they talk about where they're from, they might ask me, well, do you know where that place is, the prefecture? Which, you know, they wouldn't ask that.
Right.
But they ask me knowing that, you know, I may not know.
Right.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Again, I like that. Yeah. I feel seen, kind of like in Chinese. I don't feel seen by the expats here, where they're only looking at my outside. That's the big contrast. Well, typically, especially if they're not from North America, an immigrant country like that. That's something where from some other, basically from almost everywhere else, where usually people have more traditional notions of you know, ethnicity and race. Yeah.
You look like this, therefore you are this.
Exactly. Yeah. They're supposed to match.
Yeah.
In their mind, they're supposed to match. And truth is, they often do, but not always, right? And again,
wow.
Canadians and Americans are okay with it. I think it's kind of natural, but not so for other people.
Now that you're there for a long time or forever or somewhere in between, is it a goal at all to reach that scene state in Japanese? Because the scene state's not a language issue. It's more of people understanding that the outside doesn't need to match the inside, right?
Well, on that note, I'm reminded of, since coming back here last year, I've noticed, last time I lived here was 2010. That was sort of that was a 5-year stint. I was here from 2005 to 2000. Since that time, I want to say I've noticed an increase in people who look, they look biracial anyway, on the outside. You know, kind of maybe like dark skin, and maybe their dad was a black American, and the mother's Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And then they might be working in restaurants or something. Then I can hear them speak Japanese, and it seems pretty clear to me that they were born and raised here, and they went through the Japanese public school system.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very Japanese on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of their identity, their citizenship, often too. You know, they're totally Japanese. But on the outside, they might have blue eyes. But there's now a celebrity on Japanese TV. He's half African. His father's African, genetically anyway. And I think his parents were divorced when he was really young. His mother's Japanese. He was sort of born and raised here. He's totally Japanese on the inside. He can't speak English. He looks very like a Black American. If you saw him in the U.S., you would think, you know, he can't speak English. But he's on TV. He's on national TV. What I like about this guy that I'm talking about is that he's on national TV. I don't know how common, but he's on national TV. I see him maybe once every 2 weeks or so on TV. Great guy, nice guy, young guy, maybe his 20s. He got this big afro, by the way. So he looks totally not Japanese on the outside. But his mannerisms, the way he talks, he's 100% native in Japanese. He's got a website, I think, where he says, at the very top, he says, I can't speak English in Japanese.
Are you comfortable in Japan?
So it's a mix. It really is. At one level, yeah, sure, you know, things, it's safe here, as you know. You know, it's pretty, of course, probably it's got to be one of the safest big cities in the world here.
Yeah.
There's some comfort kind of just visually, just kind of blending in. It's kind of nice. Sometimes I mention to people that it's kind of nice to be able to go to all these various ethnic restaurants here, whether it's Turkish or Italian, mm-hmm. where everyone kind of just looks like me. Well, most people anyway. Whereas even in a place like San Francisco, so diverse, right? There's a lot of segregation there. So let's say it's a Turkish restaurant. Typically, it's going to be pretty much all white people there. Some white guys typically with their Asian girlfriend, maybe. That's kind of about it, you know? Despite the fact that San Francisco is 30% Asian or even more by now. It's always kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of a restrictive or like, I'm not supposed to go to places like that. I'm supposed to only go to Asian restaurants. But in the place where, you know, where I'm, it's supposed to be, it's my home, you know? Whereas over here, it's, oh, wow, you can go anywhere. It's kind of nice. That part's nice. There's also a lot of tension here for me because I know that people expect me to know all the little rules, and I don't. Or if I do know the rules, I don't always, it's hard for me to be smooth and comply with them. Even like at onsen, you know, hot springs.
Yeah.
I know how to do it. But even then, I still kind of worry. I look around me, see, am I supposed to walk around kind of dripping wet? You know, I always feel like eyes are on me. I feel like they can see, you know, that I'm not comfortable. I know they can't. But so there's some tension there.
Yeah, because you're supposed to know what to do.
Yeah, I'm supposed to know. Yeah, and but I don't know.
Yeah, that was the freedom for me living in Asia is a lot of times when I would be like, oh my gosh, I really don't want to offend anybody. I'd be like, I clearly am not from here, even though I could have been. But I'm like, generally speaking, they know I'm not from here. Yeah. I'm going to play the expat card right now. Not to offend, not to try to outwardly be awful, but I know I can kind of get away with something or try something, or hopefully they'll tell me if it's that bad.
Right.
But there was that kind of relief of being different.
Yeah, see, I don't have that card. And even when I try to show that card, which is what I've tried to do sometimes, it's not accepted.
Yeah, I get that.
So that makes it kind of hard, too. Yeah. So I do have a lot of tension here. I have some traumatic memories and you know, little things kind of bother me sometimes. But again, I try to focus on the good things.
Where are you more comfortable, in the Bay Area or in Tokyo?
It's hard for me to kind of answer it in kind of a black and white kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
When I do go back, I was there back in February. It was kind of a relief. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, I can do anything. I can read everything. I can't read everything in Japanese. All the advertisements. I can go to any store and just have a chat and talk and mm-hmm. ask questions, not feel like, you know, not feel that I'm looking, I'm coming across as stupid. I do often feel here that I come across as stupid, whereas I don't feel that way in the States.
Yeah.
So there's a sense of relief, and I can drive there. I don't have a driver's license here. No, I know all the ropes over there. I know which neighborhoods to avoid and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm in control.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a minority there, and that kind of causes some pain inside of me. But I know what I'm doing over there.
There was a woman that I interviewed for the book podcast, and she was born and partially raised in Japan and then lived in Los Angeles for a long time and then moved back to Japan and then just moved back to Los Angeles during COVID. And I think she constantly goes back and forth now. And the interesting thing that she said is she's like, I live in Japan. at least half of the year, sometimes a little more, but I can do that because I can go back to Los Angeles the other part of the year. So for her, it was the switching between the two that made her feel comfortable.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but you're not doing that. You're there, even though you'll visit California because you have family.
I don't know. I don't know how long we're going to be here. I mean, there are times now I definitely, you know, feel like going back. Yeah, it's more space and I can do anything and I don't have to divide up the garbage, you know, into 20 different categories.
It's so stressful. Oh my gosh. I felt like I needed a degree to figure out the chart.
I guess to the point where I'm saving up my garbage so I can go to the train station and just dump
it. Yeah, exactly. Convenience storage, like dropping it in
the
non-segregated convenience store trash can is the awful, awful workaround to that. And it's not a good idea, but it's sometimes you have to, because it's like, what is this thing and where does it go?
I just don't know. And I don't feel like looking it up and it's complicated. And, you know, I mean, those people will check, the garbage people, things like that. You know.
Yeah. Well, we've got a global audience, small as we may be, we're growing. Is there anything you'd like to know about other folks and their experiences with this kind of duality? I don't know. It feels more than a duality.
I guess I'm wondering, maybe not so much a question. I mean, there are so many different kinds of human experiences, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's different. Just because you're part of the majority ethnic group, you know, doesn't mean there isn't individual, you know, there aren't individual differences, of course. I guess I do feel like saying, though, that language, I think it's mostly an internal thing. It's inside the mind of an individual. So what I'm talking about is, you know, I have thoughts and feelings that I may want to express in a given language. Let's say I express it in I try to express a complicated thought and feeling in Japanese, but I know when I say it, even though it sounds okay, and the grammar and pronunciation might be okay, I know it's not expressing what I want to express, and it's different from what I would have expressed in English. I don't think people often realize that, you know, there might be such a gap. And that I'm the only one who knows about that gap, because I know my own thoughts and feelings. But what I'm saying is that people tend to be too prejudiced or biased towards believing that the output, the sounds you make with your mouth, that's all there is. So that if you say something in Chinese or Spanish or whatever, and it sounds kind of good, that, oh, wow, your Spanish or Chinese is good. That's not necessarily true, because it doesn't express what you're trying to say. You know what I mean? It's not like figure skating. Figure skating, you know, other people outside of you, the people in the audience, are better judges of whether the little twirl things were, you know, were good or not, because they see it's a body thing, it's a physical thing.
Yeah.
But language is another thing where it's ultimately about to what extent can you express what you want to express.
Mm-hmm.
And only one person, the person who's trying to do it, knows about that gap. Other people can't see it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
I do.
Forget that. To me, it's a very stupendously obvious point.
But it's not. It's not. When I used to teach beginning classes, English language beginner classes, so many of the teachers would come into the teacher's room and be like, man, they're just, not that they're stupid, but they're so simple, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're not simple. That's all they can say right now.
Okay.
You know, most people do have more thoughts than they can say in a beginning level class.
Of course, that's true. Yeah. That's true in your native language as well.
Right? Yes. But it's something I had to say out loud. Yeah. It's something I had to say out loud to them.
Well, the opposite of what you just said, where, you know, it may sound okay what you say in that second language. So people compliment you. Oh, wow, your Chinese is so good. It's not really, maybe in a certain situation, because it's not what you really want to say. It's not what is nowhere near as rich as it would have been were you speaking in your, you know, your native.
I feel like a lot of times people say, oh, your blah, blah, blah is so good. Your language is so good. They say that when you can use idioms or when your pronunciation is good.
Right.
But they're rarely commenting on the meatiness of the comment or if it reflects what you really wanted to say. And how would
they're not thinking about what you want to say. They're not thinking about the invisible stuff that's going on inside of your mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're only looking at the output.
Yeah. No, that's a really, really good point. But yeah, but language... it's an expression, but it also limits us when we're not When we don't have the right language to say what we want to.
Yeah, even in your own native language, mm-hmm. it's just the tip of the iceberg of your subjective experience now.
Well, that's a heavy one to leave us on. Thank you.
Okay. So that I know I'm a therapist. So I think in that way. Sorry.
No, it's true and it's beautiful and it's something to keep in mind because a lot of us, no matter how good we get at additional languages, are not going to get to that point where we're not saying, oh man, that's not exactly it, but that's as best that I can do right now.
Right. For complicated things.
Yeah.
For simple things, it's okay. You know, often you can get to a certain level where, you can fully express what you want to say for simple things.
Sure. Yeah. But I'm guessing emotions and abstract things are some of the hardest parts.
How do you feel about your family, for example?
So thank you so much, Ken, for coming on. I'll put all the information we've talked about in the show notes for the listeners. And thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the opportunity. It's good to see you again.
A very special arigato gozaimasu. Thank you to Ken for being so open and honest about his language and cultural experiences in Japan during this conversation. Also, thanks to Damon Castillo for the song California Minute from the Mess of Me album. So far, you've only heard snippets of the song, but you can hear the full song in just a minute. This podcast is brought to you by me, stephfuccio.com, where I offer podcasting services like group accountability workshops, podcast editing, and soon more. You can find the full show notes to everything we talked about here at stephfuccio.com/geopatslanguage/32. Now, let's get to California Minute by Damon Castillo.
Invisible people keep their dream alive. They're driving to work to keep the cars they drive. They're driven to win and live the will to power. Every year and every day and every hour. But a California minute, it takes a little while. Try and just forget it, or you can stretch it for a mile. Become a Hollywood star, or never go that far. But if you're here, then you can live it. Oh yeah, in the California minute. So bring us your water to help us fight the fires. Send us your singers and actors and other liars. We'll make it the movies like we mine the gold. Man, it never gets old. Just wait a California minute. It takes a little while. You can try and just forget it, or you can stretch it for a mile. Become a Hollywood star. Never go that far. But if you're here, then you can live it. Oh, yeah. In the California minute. Takes a little while. You can try and just forget it, or you can stretch it for a mile. Become a Hollywood star, but never go that far. But if you're here, then you can spin it. In the California minute. California Minute.